We're driven by the search for better. But when it comes to hiring, the best way to search for a candidate isn't to search at all. Don't search, match with Indeed. Indeed is your matching and hiring platform with over 350 million global monthly visitors, according to Indeed data, and a matching engine that helps you find quality candidates fast. Ditch the busy work. Use Indeed for scheduling, screening, and messaging so you can connect with candidates faster. Leveraging over 140 million qualifications and preferences every day, Indeed's matching engine is constantly learning from your preferences. So the more you use Indeed, the better it gets. Join more than 3.5 million businesses worldwide that use Indeed to hire great talent fast. And listeners of this show will get a $75 sponsored job credit to get your jobs more visibility at Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Just go to Indeed.com/Blue Wire right now and support our show by saying that you heard about Indeed on this podcast. That's Indeed.com/Blue Wire. Terms and conditions apply. Need to hire? You need Indeed.
Everyone is talking about magnesium. It's all you hear about. But why? What do we know about magnesium? Well, magnesium is the number one mineral that 75% of Americans are deficient in. If you are a woman over 35, magnesium will help you rediscover balance, energy, and vitality. Magnesium supports more than 300 enzymatic reactions in your body, including those involved in hormonal balance. From functional medicine doctors to mental well-being and female hormone experts, we all know that magnesium is the one mineral to improve all aspects of well-being and health. But which one? Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, the trusted choice recommended by leading experts, with 7 best-absorbed forms of magnesium to ensure your body receives the support it needs for overall well-being. Go to bioptimizers.com/balance today and use code BALANCE10 for 10% off. Support your journey to wellness at bioptimizers.com/balance. Magnesium Breakthrough from Bioptimizers, your foundation to optimal health and vitality.
The baseball season is go, go, go. It's nonstop, relentless for every night, 6 straight months, and then hopefully another month in October. You also have work, friends, family, and a million other things going on. That's when you reach for a Coors Light. It's made to chill. There's only one beer out there that's literally made to chill, and that's Coors Light. I mean, the mountains on the bottles and cans even turn blue when your beer is cold. Is there anything better than opening up your refrigerator after a long day, seeing that icy cold Coors Light can or bottle in your fridge? The answer is no, there's nothing better. That's why when it's time to chill, you choose Coors Light. It's mountain cold refreshment made to chill. Coors Light is the one I choose when I need to unwind. So that's why when you want to hit reset, reach for a beer that's made to chill. Get Coors Light in the new look delivered straight to your door with Drizzly or Instacart. Coors Brewing Company, Golden, Colorado. And as always, celebrate.
What are you doing?
I'm counting. We are breaking down all aspects of Yankee baseball. This is the Bronx Pinstripe Show with your host, Andrew Rotondi and Scott Reinen. Let's go.
What's up, everyone? Welcome to the Bronx Pinstripe Show, episode 481, brought to you today by Cuts Clothing, Indeed.com, and Bet Online. So, Scott, after the 10-game win streak, we were riding high. Since then, the Yankees are 1-3. They definitely can't play well in Buffalo. And seems like they're locked into that number 5 seed. We were thinking maybe they're going to get the 4 seed. They'll host the Twins, maybe host the White Sox. Nah, looks like it's going to be on the road.
Unless something happens with the Twins playing Cincinnati and the White Sox, you know, just laying an egg against the Cubs. That's exactly how it's looking. So, and that's a really big unknown, because that team is, it's not really an unknown. They're a good team at this point, but it's an unknown because they're just not proven in the playoffs. It's a young
team. You're talking about Chicago White Sox?
The Chicago White Sox.
Yeah.
They're a dangerous team.
Oh, yeah, definitely.
They're a dangerous team.
So are you more worried about potentially playing the White Sox than the Twins?
Well, see, it's an interesting question here. Because I'm a firm believer in do, and the way that the Minnesota Twins have set up, I mean, we've destroyed the Twins every single time there's been an opportunity to play them. There's been no question. This year, they have a guy named Michael Pineda who's pitching right now and is healthy. That's weird. And I don't like how the things align there. their pitching staff is actually pretty good. And it's good.
Didn't we say that
last
year?
It's just never good.
Though?
No, they had a rookie, Uber driver pitching against us.
Didn't we talk ourselves
into saying...
They had
an Uber driver pitching against us.
I don't know. I feel like we talked ourselves into like, oh, the Twins, you know, these are a different Twins team. And then, nope, they were the same old Twins team. The thing that I worry about with a White Sox matchup is Lucas Giolito, who's been the second best pitcher in the American League this year.
Yeah.
He's been very good. And in a three-game series, he'll pitch game one. He'll match up with Gerrit Cole, and I trust Gerrit Cole against anyone. But what if it's a one-to-one game in the eighth inning and the Yankees just don't win it? You know, and the White Sox steal that Lucas Giolito game over Gerrit Cole, then you're looking at Tanaka backed up by Hap, and it's going to be Hap, it looks like. Cashman, did you hear that Meredith report last night? Cashman all but announced that Jay Hap's the number three starter. So then you just put yourself in a hole like that in a three-game series, you're, to borrow the judge phrase, backs are against the wall immediately.
It's true. The backs are against the wall if that's the case, but that has to happen first. You gotta lose that goal, that Cole game. And like you said, I have confidence in there. I know the bats have to show up against Giolito, but theoretically, the Yankees should, you know, they should be able to go against and put some good at bats against a guy like Giolito. I think that with the Yankees lineup, you know, being healthy again, turning over, Judge is having much better at bats. Gary Sanchez will be back down towards the bottom of the lineup after he flashed again. And actually, that's not true because Higgy will be playing. So Higgy will be back at the bottom of the lineup. And I think I got a lot of confidence with this offense getting some runs. And you know what it's going to be? It's going to be a couple long balls. That's what it's going to be. They're going to take him deep two or three times.
Especially in the playoffs where connecting hits together and connecting a rally together is so impossible that, yeah, it's who's going to hit the two-run home run that changes the momentum of the game.
And in this case, you know, those solo shots that are usually okay were good with Cole giving them up, and Giolito's probably in the same vein where he's, you know, a little bit more aggressive and around the plate when there's nobody on base. Like, those solo shots could be the difference in the game now, too, because you're looking at two very, very good pitchers who control the game and, you know, you just can't make mistakes. And with the offense, they have to capitalize over everything. So those solo shots that are normally, okay, you know, you move forward, they could be the difference in the game.
Yeah. The old cliche is solo home runs don't beat you, but maybe they do in the playoffs.
In the playoffs, that's a different story for sure.
Are you at all worried that the Yankees are not the same team on the road as they are at home? And it looks like they're going to be playing technically the entire playoffs on the road, but specifically that three-game series is at the other team's location. A neutral site, you want to throw out the window, fine, neutral site. But this wouldn't be a neutral site. They're going to be playing in Minnesota, or they're going to be playing at the White Sox. Now, the White Sox stadium is a hitter's park. Minnesota's a little bit different, but with the juice ball, I don't know, isn't everything a hitter's park? Doesn't the juice ball and the Yankees home run hitters kind of negate any possible like non-home run park? Like, in my mind, I don't care where they're playing, they're still gonna hit home runs.
I mean, so then exactly what you just said kind of gets rid of the home field or non-home field advantage.
Well, no, I mean, the stats still show the Yankees at home are 21-7. They score over 6 runs a game and they allow less than 4 runs a game, and on the road they're 10-17 and they score about 4 runs a game and allow about 5 runs a game. Now, I understand in a 60 game schedule things are going to be skewed. Right. That's going to be skewed by the 5-15 stretch in a negative way, and it's going to be skewed in a positive way by the week against Toronto where they scored 100 runs at home.
Right.
So everything's skewed, but the numbers are still the numbers, and this is the numbers we have to go by, is it looks like the Yankees are a better team all around at home.
If there's a slight edge, okay, sure. That's, you know, they'd rather play at home. There's no doubt. There's a comfort level. There's just a, you know, a different familiarity. Fine. I'm good with admitting that. I just don't think it's that much of a difference. Exactly what you said, the numbers, I mean, they got skewed pretty hard. you go five and 15 and then you win 10 in a row. I mean, those are polar opposites of streaks, and depending on where you played those games, you're in a 60 game schedule, you're going to see some sway because
guess what?
Of that.
That's a 15-15 stretch when you look at it.
But there's a depending on where those games are, when did the team get hot? Were they on the road or were they at home? That matters because more to the the point of the ballpark. It matters when the team got hot and what team was out there. That 5-15 team was a dog shit team that was running out there with, you know, with scraps. There was not much to take about it when you look at what's going to happen and the players that are in the lineup come playoff time. So I have a hard time looking at those numbers and taking anything from it. Go back and look at the numbers from the last 2 years. And the Yankees were, you know, overwhelmingly better team at home with the Yankee crowd. And it didn't translate into the playoffs. It didn't translate into wins in the playoffs. I have a hard time really looking at what happens in the regular season based on the ballpark and then laying it on top of a short series in the playoffs.
Yeah. And I mean, obviously the Yankees want to win. I mean, they were disappointed after last night's game. They're talking about how I think Luke Voit said they played like the Bad News Bears.
Luke Voit talked about it and called out the embarrassment. They went on a 10-0 streak. So,
okay.
You know, so knocking on wood
here.
He's
the key. But so obviously I'm not saying they're out there not trying, but the emphasis for this whole season has not been get the number one seed or win the division or get home field advantage. It's basically get in and try and get healthy and hot at the same time.
Exactly. And the one seed was out the window a while ago. So that was not even in consideration really after the last series.
Basically once Tampa stomped them in the last series, yeah, it was over.
It was done. And then the rest of it, what are you going to do? Set up for like, maybe this team will win or lose. There's just too much room. There's just too much flux in the schedules and people winning and losing and small difference between winning percentage and wins and losses between the teams of, you know, 3 through 6. I know there's a gap between us and the Astros, but you know, depending on how the White Sox and the Twins finish the season, I mean, the Yankees could move up, you know, a spot as well. So it's just not on them. So I don't see how they could potentially even like look at that as a barometer, at least.
Yeah. I mean, I think there would have been so the way the playoffs are set up is it's a bracket. It's not a just pure seeding tournament where you reseed after every round. So, and especially with all the unknowns on who's going to finish where, you and I were trying to figure it out before the podcast. That's not something you want to figure out at 8 o'clock in the morning.
I will say this. It gave me flashbacks.
Gives you a damn popsicle headache.
It gave me flashbacks to last postseason when the Yankees would confuse the hell out of everybody. It wasn't the Yankees, but it was Major League Baseball. Confuse the hell out of everybody because when you buy postseason tickets ahead of the teams being announced, it's home game one, home game two, home game three, and you know, home game two might be game four, and it's confusing as hell when you're trying to talk about it. But they do that obviously based on the fact that they don't know who the teams are yet.
Is it just me? So, or is this bracket the San Diego bracket, which has the AL division number one, meaning the best team in the American League? Doesn't that have a harder? Isn't that like a harder bracket? Because it also has AL second number one. Why wouldn't it have AL second number three? It has AL second number one and AL second number two. Why wouldn't it have number two and number three? So the way I look at this is there's more better teams, or in this context, teams who won more games this year are in the San Diego bracket and teams who won fewer games are in the Los Angeles bracket.
Well, no, look at the seeding though. Look at the actual seeding. So go from top to bottom. Think about like NCAA. You got AL Division One on the very top. You got
the number one seed.
Yep. And you got the number two seed at the bottom, right where it should be. Right?
Yeah.
At the very bottom. Then you go back up, and the number three seed is again in the bottom bracket, lining up for the number two team for the ALDS. So now the basically they want to keep the winner, the division winner, the AL winner, out of the ability to play the number two team.
Yeah, you know what it is? You are right. But I guess it's just that the Yankees are in the Rays bracket. And if things go to plan, the Yankees and the Rays are going to be playing in the ALDS. And you know what? That does not excite me.
Well, no, and it's not good for the Yankees either, because now that's a best of five series, not a best of seven series. And I actually think that hurts the Yankees because of the top flight pitching that they have, that the Rays have at the front of their rotation. And I know that their bullpen's nasty as well, but when you now condense this series into a shorter five games. Yeah, that's what I mean.
Five days,
right. Then now you're using every thread of your being in that bullpen and that rotation, and you lay them next to each other, and Tampa's just better. Bottom line, better talent, better execution this season. They're just, as far as the pitching staff, they're a better team. So that to me, and it's not just that they're a better team by marginal differences. Their pitching staff is significantly better. Now, granted, we could get Tanaka, playoff Tanaka, and roll out there 7 innings.
Sure.
No runs. And then, you know, who knows? Like maybe Boone pulls, a fast one on everybody, and Hap's lined up. No, it's Davey Garcia coming out. The kid comes out and tries to, you know, put a spark in this team and drill down the Tampa Rays. Huge storylines. He goes out there and pitches a complete game gem. Yeah, like a lot of these things could line up, but if you look at the numbers and the players, Tampa's just significantly better.
Yeah, and another thing I worry about in a series against Tampa is the manager matchup. And in a 5-game series that happens in 5 days, where weird shit will happen, I do not feel confident about Boone going up against Kevin Cash.
If Boone can just leave the players off that are going to hurt them in the lineup card, then we're good, because that was a savvy move. Savvy move by him.
You're talking about Tyler Lyons making it onto the lineup card?
Right. They could have lost that game. It was a save.
Well, what if he pitched bad because he had to warm up and get ready the night before and then not actually pitch? B-whips, Scott.
Can't buy it.
B-whips.
Has he been on a team?
Big time B-whips.
Has he been on a team this season?
I don't know. I feel like Brian Cashman has Tyler Lyons hidden in a bunker somewhere at all times.
Well, he really shouldn't. He really should not have Tyler Lyons hidden anywhere.
Who was the other guy? Tyler Lyons, and then there was a right-handed pitcher. David Hale.
David Hale was the other. He was always
the right-handed Tyler Lyons.
Yeah. Yeah, so there's that. But you're right. I think Kevin Cash has proven over the time that we've played them that he knows his team very well, like in and out. He's got a better pulse on his team than Aaron Boone does on the Yankees, I'd say. And, you know, I think that they've had a ton of injuries as well. So, you know, there's credit to Cash here. It's not the same guys. It's not like they haven't been hit by the injury bug. Literally every team has, but they got hit hard as well. So he's just proven, man. He's an interesting manager because he does know the players inside and out. And a lot of the moves that he makes seem to be right.
Well, they clinched last night. They were smoking cigars, and I gotta imagine.
Did you see their hats?
The 98ers.
The 98ers.
Yeah, that's not about guys throwing 98. The team was established in 1998. Okay. That's why they were wearing that hat.
Then what about the shirt? Explain the shirt then.
I didn't see the shirt.
It was a stable of horses.
Oh, okay.
Okay. So he's wearing the shirt, stable of horses, and he's wearing a hat that says 98ers. And you're telling me that there's not a connection there. Is that what you're saying?
No.
Because I'm telling you that's crazy.
I didn't know about the shirt. Okay. I just saw the hat. And you know what? I still think the hat is about the 1998 establishment. Okay, because those hats they didn't have those hats made. Those are like legit hats you sell like in the team shop.
They're a Major League Baseball team. They could get a hat made in a turnaround time of a few days.
They don't have the Rays don't have money for that. They spend all their money on nerds.
The nerds, apparently one of the nerds.
Do you know what their nerd
is? He knows how to embroider.
Is?
The nerds also know how to embroider. Does that surprise you? Does that surprise you?
Their nerd payroll is higher than their team payroll.
Of course it is. Well,
I don't even remember what I was going to say about Tampa. But I think that, you know, even though it was 60 games, this is a prove me season for Tampa. Like, hey, everyone's saying the Yankees are written into the division winner, but we're right here. Our 90, what, they win 97 games last year or something. They won like mid-90s games last year. That's not a fluke. We're going to win the division this year. And I kind of have a hard time saying that the only reason they won the division is because it was a 60-game schedule. If this was a 162-game schedule, they were going to be right there for the division.
There's no doubt. I mean, especially the way that the Yankees team was playing when injuries happened. They just weren't the same that happened last year. And Tampa played, you know, they played decently well throughout the entire thing. They're a deep team. They're just up and down. The lineup deep, and then the rotation deep, bullpen deep. So Yeah, no, they were definitely going to be there. They're a good team. There's no doubt about it. We said in the beginning, when I was talking with the guys from the Locked On Tampa podcast, when we did the previews, talked to them twice because the first time was right before COVID. The second time was, before the season started. There was a lot of confidence going on around there, a lot of confidence happening. And for good reason, because they were a good team. I mean, he was definitely making some lofty comparisons about that pitching staff. And at the end of the day, he wasn't really wrong. We knew the bullpen was going to be good, but there were some considerations with their Rays starting pitching, and it was about health. And they've pretty much danced, walked the line where they're walking in with a relatively healthy rotation. At least you get the top three guys with Glasnow and Snell and then Morton. I know Morton was out for a bit, but that's a guy that's got, the playoff experience. He's got the veteran presence. And then the other two are just like Snell, Cy Young winner. And then Glasnow, I feel like has something to prove here. I feel like Glasnow is out there now with all the talent in the world with something to prove, because nobody knows who he is.
I feel like Glasnow, when he's on, he's the most unhittable of those pitchers.
I agree with you. I think Snell is probably down a tick. But yeah. And then Charlie Morton, he's just one of those guys that's annoying and will probably pitch well. Just because he's a veteran dude and knows how to do it.
Yeah, I don't exactly know how they're going to line up their postseason rotation. But if you're facing Charlie Morton in a winner-go-home scenario, that does not sound fun.
No, it doesn't sound fun. I mean, it sounds probably the best of the three options, but it's not fun. He's been there before. He's got that experience. So. And I think that in the postseason, when you're talking about this, postseason experience does matter. Maybe this year you could argue that it really doesn't as much, just because there's no fans and it's just going to be weird compared to other years. But it's still pressure internally.
Yeah, there's so many teams that are going to be in the playoffs this year, especially in the National League with the Padres and potentially the Marlins. But in the American League, the White Sox are a brand new team to the playoffs. The Cleveland, the Indians haven't been there in a couple of years. And that's another team that Shane Bieber, if you play Cleveland so I guess the Yankees would not be able to play Cleveland until the ALCS. If I have this bracket correctly, if things remain the same,
they would the wild card
number one. They're the wild card number one. Cause Toronto is the wild card number two.
Right.
So they are in the Los Angeles division.
They're in the bottom.
So if the Yankees played the Indians in the ALCS, they would be facing Shane Bieber in two games and then probably in a third game out of the bullpen. And he's been possibly the AL MVP this year. That's how good he's been.
Wait, who did you say? We would play them in the ALCS.
Yeah, what did I say? DS?
Yeah, so it's a seven-game series.
So ALCS, seven-game series. So you'd face him two starts and then probably a relief appearance.
I like it better. It's a seven game series at least. Just
yeah, it gives you more time, but it's still no off days. This no off days thing is really throwing me for a loop. I'm so curious how it's going to affect teams, and so worried for the Yankees that their pitching staff is not deep enough to last back-to-back series with no off days.
I am pretty sure that Cone last night, talking about Eric Kratz, convinced himself that he was going to be a weapon out of the bullpen potentially for Aaron Boone at some point because of the no days off and the fact that he's got just a filthy knuckleball. So I actually think David Cone has also gone a little mad and convinced himself that this is probably a good option. And maybe he's not wrong. Maybe he's not wrong. When you get down,
did you see,
the fourth day in a row and your bullpen is trashed because your starting pitchers have gone two innings.
If Eric Kratz, envision a scenario where the Yankees are in the ALCS game seven, it's the 14th inning. Every other arm is just hanging off the shoulder. In comes Eric Kratz to just give him length, and the Yankees win that game. He'd be the number one legend in Yankee history.
The folklore would go on for a very long time. Yes. it would be probably the most, appropriate thing for 2020 as well. So,
I tweeted out last night, imagine back on March 14th, the day before everything shut down because of COVID. Someone told you that Eric Kratz would be throwing knuckleballs for the Yankees on the mound in Buffalo against the Blue Jays. What the hell is going on?
Oh my God.
Number one.
Not in a Not in a regular
in an empty minor league park.
Retrofitted park that you can't see in.
The clubhouse is out in the parking lot. It's freaking unbelievable. So
it's like a 9-hour game too. Freaking long.
Yeah, Cone and Kay were complaining about it last night. And you know what? I don't blame them. Tanaka last night looked uncomfortable, to say the least, on the mound. I know the defense sucked. I mean, Gary Sanchez throwing error in the first inning. There was a ground ball that took a weird hop that extended the first inning. Gleyber Torres now tied for the lead in errors at shortstop. Just Luke Voit just completely whiffing on a pickoff throw. It was bad defense all the way around.
Voit made one nice play, that probably every single first baseman, is in front of. But that's the foot stuff.
He's got one.
I can't say anything badly about that guy, man. The way that he's playing through foot stuff,
unreal.
Yeah, and then he made a nice little shovel dart pass to Tanaka. So, I'll live with his defense. It's fine.
So we obviously talked about outs above average and eye test versus nerd test a couple episodes ago. And like the concerns with the Yankees infield, we were having this conversation in the Facebook chat last night after Gleyber made the error. And maybe it's a little reactionary, but if you have a one run lead in the eighth inning, do you, instead of defensive substitution for Luke Voit, do you defensive substitute Tyler Wade at shortstop?
Oh, you're putting in Tyler Wade now. Now you're putting in Tyler Wade to come in and save the game at the end. Listen, is that what you're doing?
I'm happy to shit all over Tyler Wade, but the man can play defense.
The man can play defense. Yeah, so it's an actual consideration. I don't think they would do it.
I don't either.
But it's a consideration. Let's say Gleyber's had kind of a tough day at short. Now I think that consideration is different. If everything lines up and Gleyber has booted a ball here, and there's a guy on second base also, what about an in-game, an in-inning switch?
The thing is, it's like, yeah, the errors happen, and errors are not a good measure of someone's defense. Like, Gleyber has made mistakes, but he's also
doesn't have range.
He doesn't.
Yeah, but errors also are a consideration when you're looking at if there are errors there.
Okay, yes. Like, because errors can be mental. And do you remember that inning? A couple years ago, Elvis Andrews made 3 errors in an inning.
It's like the dude on the Blue Jays right fielder. It's like Frazier in right field.
They can be mental.
Yes. You could go not block for an inning. My point is,
Matt Chapman, I know he's injured now, but Matt Chapman a couple years ago led the league in third baseman errors. You would never defensive substitute for Matt Chapman.
Well, the reason he's there is because he's a vacuum and gets to every ball, right? So
yeah,
there's considerations. But
so it's not the end all be all, is what I'm saying.
But when you don't have range and you have errors,
yes,
I'm looking at that as the red flag.
Mental mistakes for Gleyber. And I don't think they would do it either, because Gleyber, I think, is their future at shortstop. And it might, they I think, would consider his confidence if they were to.
I think it's more of a consideration of the bat that he holds when he's up at the plate that could sway the game.
What if he made the last out of the seventh inning? Okay. And that you have a one run lead and Zach Britton's coming in for the eighth inning.
And you have a one run lead. Yeah. I'm still keeping him in, because you can't play to hold that one run lead and just assume that that's not going to happen. Like, you got to make sure that you're prepared for the rest of it. And you don't want Tyler Wade hitting in the 3 spot, the 4 spot, the 5 spot, wherever Gleyber is going to be hitting either, behind, productive players that have the ability to get on base. Like, okay, maybe he could bunt. Maybe a good bunt situation potentially, but
yeah, the defense probably does not outweigh the loss at offense if it comes up to a situation. And I know what they like to do is they like to take Voit out of the game and put DJ at first and put Wade at second. But so that's their sort of defensive replacement.
Flip Gleyber, put him at second, put Wade at short, start playing musical positions.
You know what? Well, see, the concerning thing with Gleyber is that when I think he has regressed each of his 3 seasons in the big leagues defensively. Do you remember when he came up and how good he looked at second base in 2018? And they said, oh, he's going to get even more comfortable. And you think this is good? You should see him at shortstop because he's got natural instincts at shortstop. I haven't seen that.
I think it was such an easy storyline because he was a shortstop coming up that he's got the natural shortstop instincts. Everybody, always puts shortstops on a pedestal, and as the, you know, one of the better defenders on the infield. And growing up, usually the kid at shortstop is always the good, the best defender on the team or best defender on the infield. And he just, I don't know, he just hasn't, he definitely has these mental lapses, and he just doesn't have the, I don't know, the feel for the shortstop position to be a an elite guy. And I mean, can that come with time? Sure, but still, we have not seen it. He was definitely a better defender at second base, and the defense was seemingly better by the eye test when you had Didi at short, Glaber at second base. So, when you know, it's funny because when you see a guy like Glaber at short and the range that he has as well, I don't understand how LeMahieu has never ever like gone over to shortstop. Not just with the Yankees, but like even with Colorado. I know he played short, I think, for at least a short time when he was at LSU. I would just not be surprised if we put DJ LeMahieu at shortstop that he'd be probably the second best shortstop on the team behind Tyler Wade.
Yeah, it's I know what you're saying, but
his footwork is fine. Like he's got good. I know he's not the fastest guy. He's not fleet of foot by any means, but he's got a foot
big.
Good first
he's
step.
So big. He's like sneaky big.
I mean, Jeter is
bigger.
6'3", 6'4". I mean, he's
but LeMahieu just looks.
A-Rod also.
I guess, yeah, A-Rod's a good comparison.
Cal Ripken.
I mean, A-Rod,
like,
A-Rod
started
was an elite,
this whole thing.
A-Rod was an elite defensive shortstop, and he was as big as
Machado.
Machado, well, yeah, he was a third baseman, though.
He played short.
So do you think that was Tanaka's last regular season start as a Yankee last night?
You know, we've been talking about this. It would not surprise me. Yeah, go ahead. The tweets.
Well, no. So Brian Hoke tweeted that Tanaka said on Zoom that as he warmed up last night, he thought about it being his last start of the 7-year deal with the Yankees. And then Tanaka tweeted after the game. It was in Japanese, so I translated it. That's
because that goes well all the time.
That's why it might sound a little choppy. And it is long. I guess you can fit
you translated it, or you hit the little button that says translate on Twitter, because that's what I did.
I looked up my, I have a English to Japanese dictionary.
Oh, yeah.
And I translated it. Yeah.
Then how did you not know what Yowai meant?
In 2020, and with a 7-year contract, I have pitched for the last time in the regular season. The result was disappointing. However, I still have a chance to start over in the playoffs. So I would like to make adjustments from tomorrow. I would like to look back on it after the season is over. That was his tweet.
Okay, so there's a couple of things you could take from that. Tanaka being a guy that, you know, is very matter of fact. He understands that his contract is up, and that, that it was
strictly facts.
I'm talking facts here. 7-year deal.
Fact.
Last regular season start of his 7-year deal,
fact.
Which
yep.
He referenced. He
Factual.
Referenced. He referenced the length of the deal.
Yep. Fact,
and
not opinion.
And now that is over. Mm-hmm. And so now he is disappointed that he did not close out the contract that the New York Yankees baseball club signed him for to pitch on their team in the regular season. And he's reflecting on that because he wishes that he could have appeased ownership and management and gone out as a, you know, as a winner and not a guy that does not fulfill the term sheet in which he had signed. So he's an honorable guy. He likes to make sure he's on top.
Factual man.
A lot of facts spit here. There's really not too much to read into it, especially since we're translating, and there could definitely be something, you know, the term lost in translation. Definitely could be something here with the way that it was
said. You see that movie? Have you seen that movie?
I don't think I've seen that movie.
That's a movie with Scarlett Johansson and Bill Murray about going to Japan.
There you go. We've come full circle. I don't know where to go from here.
I'm 83% sure I'm right on that. That's what that movie's about. So Tanaka finishes the season 48 innings pitched, 3.56 ERA, 44 strikeouts. And that's, you know, that's actually maybe a little bit better than where people would have projected Tanaka for a regular season. You know, he usually has one of these stretches in a full season where he might need to skip two starts for whatever reason, or he might have a bad stretch. So his ERA might have creeped up closer to 4. But knowing what we know about Tanaka, and people love to talk about playoff Tanaka, and he has been an excellent postseason performer. There's no denying that. I still am of the opinion that you can't assume he's going to just flip a switch in the postseason, but every year he seemingly has. So whatever. What is the contract you are offering him? Are you offering him a contract in the offseason, or are you letting him walk? And if you are offering him, what's the contract?
Have you looked at Tanaka's age recently?
He's 31. He's an old 31.
Right.
Because that elbow's got to be concerning for the Yankees.
No, I'm not even worried about the elbow. Is, dude, the
dude, I feel like they're on borrowed. Yes, they're on borrowed. Yes, they're on borrowed time with that thing. Okay.
No.
Look what happened with Justin Verlander. Look what happened with all these pitchers that avoid injury throughout their career, and then boom, it just catches up to them at some point.
Verlander's 36 years old, 37 years old, 37 years old.
Okay, but Tanaka had all those innings in Japan. All these innings in the American League.
Verlander pitches how many complete games a year compared to what Tanaka pitches? They might have evened out at this point with the amount of five inning starts that he's had.
We heard about the Tanaka folklore about him throwing like 160 pitches.
I agree with you.
Japan.
I'm not disagreeing. I'm busting chops on that one, but I agree that he's an old 31. When I looked at his age, the reason I asked you that question is because I had a brain fart when I was just about to think this, so I looked it up to see how old he was. And in my brain, I had like 34 years old for whatever reason in my head. And then I saw 31. I was like, oh shit, that's right. I forgot that he's that young. And he does feel like an older guy. He's like one of those guys. He's like the, the guys that come up when they're into the bigs, when they're 18 years old, and mm-hmm. you look back and you're like, that guy must be 35 years old. He's like
Starlin Castro.
Yeah. Perfect example. You're like, I can't believe how young he is. He's been around forever. And while Tanaka hasn't been around forever, he's been on this team for a long time. It seems like he's been around
7 years.
Here for
we just learned that
time.
From his tweet.
Right. And we knew that though. But it seems like we've been hearing about it for even longer. And we knew about, you know, how he pitched those, you know, two games in one day or, all of these things about him pitching extended innings in high school and coming up in Japan. So yeah. I'm not looking at the elbow as much of a concern. Look, it's a consideration. There's no doubt that the medicals will all come back and they will give a report on it and it will ding him for a contract. But he's been pitching with this with no issues for what, 2.5 years, 3 years.
Here's where the issue has come up though. He's basically I would imagine because of his arm. Something is causing he has abandoned his fastball because it's not the same fastball. You're telling me that's not injury related at all? 0%?
I just have a hard time chalking it up to injury because now his arm is what it is. It's like maybe the injury has played into, you know, the how it's deteriorated over time and like other parts of the arm.
Yeah.
I don't know the anatomy of his arm right now and what the elbow looks like. I don't know how, because it very well, it was a partial tear. It, for all intents and purposes, healed by now. Scar tissue. It's not a tear any longer. So it's not, and it has not flared up as an issue. So
it's a non-issue. I'm shocked by that. So knowing what we know about Tanaka, he is an old 31. He is at this point a finesse pitcher who requires missing bats and outsmarting teams and getting soft contact. He is a mid to high 3 ERA pitcher who's probably like a 5-inning guy. Do you agree with those things?
Yeah, I do.
What kind of contract are you giving him?
2-year deal with a 3rd-year option. Like I'm giving him a J-Hap deal.
The J-Hap contract?
Yeah.
That's exactly where I landed. I even guaranteed the 3rd year. So I said 3 years, $18 million, which is $54 million for 3 years. I am not going more than 3 years with Tanaka. I think you're setting yourself up too much for risk.
Yeah, I don't disagree. I think it's there's going to have to be some kind of an option in there because if he exceeds it, he could exceed it in a big way. You know, there's that potential at least, and I think that he would be stupid not to have that caveat in the contract. Like if you were to go, you know, a significantly more amount of injury or innings or just
it would have to be game starts because he's not going to get the innings.
Game starts or I don't know, some other type of incentive based on performance. I could see that being a trigger in a contract for him. And if I'm his agent, I'm definitely using that. If I'm not getting
but
that fourth
you
year.
You are signing him, though. You are signing him.
No, that's not what I'm saying either. I mean, personally, look, I like Tanaka a lot. If they're going to sign him and they're going to use him as like a fourth, fifth guy, good. fine. And it's an insurance policy because we don't know what Severino is going to be next year. I do feel like Montgomery is going to be a mainstay in this rotation for years to come. I think that he's going to be fine. We've seen better Montgomery recently, but again, weird year for him. Really hard to take what he actually is from this year. But so I look back and I look to see what he was before the injury, and then, you know, the actual health of the guy and how he's come back afterwards. Like, the results have not been there, but he's, for all intents and purposes, healthy. He's throwing even harder. Seems fine. Like, I feel like we're ready for a really good year for him. Just kind of like, to me, the writing is on the wall. Mm-hmm. So I would rather pitch the young guys. I mean, I want the Davey Garcias, the Clarksters. I don't want them to be buried in the minor leagues anymore. I don't think that's a good thing for the New York Yankees. I think them.
No, but signing Tanaka is not burying them, because Paxton's spot's going to be gone. I don't think they're going to sign Paxton. I wouldn't sign Paxton.
You can only sign, if you're going to sign Paxton, Tanaka, it's got to be one of those guys. And I don't see how you can possibly sign Paxton unless they just get a huge bargain. But you can't rely on him, because now he's taking up a spot and again, you're walking in with a rotation from the New York Yankees that's freaking a mystery, because
it's Garrett Cole, question mark, question mark, question mark, question mark, Tanaka. That's what the rotation would be.
Yeah, and that's irritating as all hell. So, yeah, I don't want him. I don't want James Paxton on the team.
I don't either.
And it's not based on what he's done when he's on the field, but it's purely based on the fact that he cannot be relied upon. And he'll probably go somewhere else and dominate like everybody else who's left.
He would have to stay healthy, and he can't do that. Even though sports had a break, your business didn't. You have to keep moving, and that makes hiring more important than ever. Indeed is here to help. Indeed.com is the number one job site in the world, because Indeed gets you the best people fast. Unlike other sites, Indeed gives you full control and payment flexibility over your hiring. You only pay for what you need, you can pause your account at any time, and there's no long-term contracts. Plus, Indeed provides powerful tools to make your search that much easier, like sponsored jobs, which are shown to be 3.5 times more likely to result in a hire. With 73% of online job seekers visiting Indeed each month, Indeed is going to get you the important hire you need, just like they have for over 3 million businesses. Right now, Indeed is offering our listeners a free $75 credit to boost your job post, which means more quality candidates will see it fast. And I've used this before to hire. Let me tell you, $75, you're probably going to get your candidate. You're going to get a ton of candidates with that amount of credit. Try Indeed out with a free $75 credit at Indeed.com/BlueWire. This is their best offer available anywhere. Go right now, Indeed.com/BlueWire. Terms and conditions apply. Offer valid through September 30th.
Guys, the wait is finally over and football is back. And you might not be at the game this year, but you could still bet on the game and on the action at BetOnline. BetOnline is going the extra mile to make sure that you can get in on every possible chance to win this season. From game spreads and totals to team, player, and coaching props, BetOnline gives you more options to wager than anywhere else. You can get in on their season opening bonuses today and start wagering on wins, division, and championship futures all day, every day. Head to BetOnline today and take advantage of all the great sign-up bonuses. Don't forget to use your promo code BLUEWIRE at betonline.ag. That's BLUEWIRE, all one word. BetOnline, your online sportsbook experts.
We'll talk about Garrett Cole and eye test versus nerd test. I would be remiss if I did not mention my guy, Michael King.
It's a dull Swiss Army knife.
He got optioned back to the alternate site. I feel like that was his last chance for this season. He's not a starting pitcher yet. I think that's what we've learned. And when you break down the numbers, the first time through the order, he is allowing a 194 batting average, a 306 on base percentage, a 725 OPS. It's not by any means fantastic, but it's doable. Like, we've seen pitchers be much worse who are pitching in the rotation. He's allowed only 2 runs when he's pitching first time through the order. It's second time through the order is when he gets absolutely bombarded. He is allowing a 385 batting average, a 984 OPS, a 500 slugging. He's allowed where's the runs? 7 runs in only 31 plate appearances, second time through the order. Now, I don't know if that's because he doesn't have a reliable third pitch. I don't know if it's a durability stamina thing. I don't know if it means he's just destined to be a middle reliever. I don't know what exactly it means.
It's a problem. It's a problem for him if he's destined to be a middle reliever because he's got to go, you know, multiple innings.
Right. So, I mean,
he doesn't have the back of the bullpen stuff. So he's got to figure out his pitch selection and get that down, because if he's not able to go in and chew up innings in the middle of a game, I don't know where he lives.
I don't either. But I mean, we've seen flashes, because those first time through the orders, he's looked really good. That sinker moves so much. And we've seen guys take weak hacks at it and just pound it into the ground. And that's all great. And then it blows up on him. I don't know.
I'm rooting for him,
but like, I don't know.
He's not your reigning Rhode Island MVP.
Not a great bold prediction on my part.
The thing about him is if he could get that, as his career is progressing, if he can really focus on that sinker and actually get it to just a nasty pitch and then be able to, you know, locate the fastball, you know, throw in a changeup or something else that looks like the sinker, but has a good speed difference. You know, he could end up chalking in, you know, getting into like a 6th-7th inning role somewhere for sure. But he's a 1-inning guy, it seems like.
At this point. Yeah.
The
Yankees seem to like him for whatever reason.
He's controllable and can eat innings.
Yeah.
So. There's a lot of guys. We have so many guys like him.
I guess going in next year, he's kind of competing again for that bullpen spot starter
with a lot of people. Nick Nelson. Loaizaga. You're getting a lot of these guys up there. We've seen flashes, but at the end of the day, just, you know, haven't figured it out. Not in the role that they're in. I still believe that Loaizaga needs to be a 1-inning guy. That's it. He's not a 2-inning guy.
No, I mean, I think we all were hoping he could be sort of the Chad Green number 2, but he hasn't been.
No, I mean, if he's able to bottle his stuff up for a 1-inning appearance, I could see him, you know, refining his pitch selection and refining the way that he goes about the at-bats and being effective, because he throws really hard. He's got good control and he's got good stuff. I just don't think it doesn't translate over. So far, it has not translated over extended innings.
So a few other random things that have happened this week that I found interesting. So DJ LeMahieu, I guess, was talking on Zoom. When he was asked about winning AL Player of the Week, he said, very cool. When he was asked about the batting title race, he said, I view it as a distraction. And then when he was asked about celebrating the postseason berth with a glass of champagne in a hotel lobby, he said, it's not as fun as doing it in a locker room and trying to burn each other's eyes. I love this man.
I mean, I'm gonna be so upset if they don't resign.
You're gonna be inconsolable.
This is one of those guys. I was not happy when Didi didn't sign. I also wasn't surprised. DJ LeMahieu is a different story. You cannot lose DJ LeMahieu. You just can't. He is the freaking. Like the spine of this team. He is everything. You cannot lose this guy.
It's not just it, but we talked about this at some point over the last week as well. Who's going to play second base if you don't re-sign him? They made a decision to let Didi walk, Glaber to shortstop. Who's your second baseman if it's not DJ LeMahieu? It's not Tyler Wade. As much as you love Tyler Wade, it is not Tyler Wade.
You're putting words in my mouth here. I've told you why
you
I love Tyler Wade.
You want Tyler Wade instead of DJ LeMahieu, you mother.
Tyler Wade is a great last guy on the bench. That's it. That's as far as I go with him.
How many times have you said
that? Can we be clear on this? As far as I go on Tyler Wade is I think he's a good last guy on the bench because he can run, bunt, and play defense. That's it. That's why I like him. The thing about Glaber is if LeMahieu's gone, Glaber's got to go back to second base and you got to go out and get yourself a badass shortstop. That's what has to happen.
I mean, I guess the people are saying Lindor.
Right. Well, Lindor or somebody else that's a stud. But you can't, I feel like You're not going to go out there and get a stud second baseman, right? Like, those are few and far between.
Is Lindor a free agent after this year, or I'm looking this up right now.
DJ LeMahieu just solves so many problems for the Yankees. He gets base hits. He hits home runs. He plays every position. He would be the best, second best shortstop on the team if they put him there. He is a rock when it comes to emotional, you know,
2022
emotional, like, sustainability. Nothing wavers with this man. He tries to play through injuries. He comes back from injuries quickly. He is everything that this team needs. If they lose DJ LeMahieu, they lose the soul of this team. They lose the spine of this team. I can't understate it enough. I can't overstate it enough. It's huge.
I do not see him walking because of all those reasons you just said. Lindor is a free agent after 2021.
So they'll trade him next year.
But that's a big, if they want to trade him, I mean, maybe it depends on what they do in the playoffs this year. If they just get bounced in the wild card round, the Indians I'm talking about, maybe they're like, you know what, this team's not good enough to really do anything. We kind of snuck in as a expanded playoff team anyway. So we're going to try and get a bunch of boatload of prospects for Francisco.
Which is exactly what they've been doing every time. They try to get younger, controllable with frontline starting pitching, and they see what happens.
Good. They're good at that.
Yeah, they are good at that. They are good at that. So they've, you know, I would not be surprised if they did that next year. At all, or even in the offseason, honestly, just to go into the season without the distraction of that short that happening at the midseason. If they got a huge deal, because I wouldn't be surprised in the offseason if GMs were coming in hot for Lindor to get him ahead of that, you know, midseason type trades in the offseason, because everything is so weird right now. Like, you're trying to go out and get those guys. You don't know what's going to happen next year.
Lindor is a guy that if you're trading for him, you're going to be trading a lot of prospects.
Yeah.
And you're not going to want him for 1 year. So you're going to sign him, and he's going to sign a $25 million a year contract.
There will be an extension signed. Yeah. It'll be like a sign and trade type thing. Yes.
Okay. But then you're limiting yourself to only a certain number of teams who can afford 8 years at $25, $30 million for Francisco Lindor.
But you're always going to do that. You're not going to, I mean, okay, you're going to send Lindor. It would be downright unbelievably stupid for someone just to rent Lindor and give up the price that it would take to just rent him.
So if you're the Yankees, I mean, you've got to trade basically everyone not named Jason Dominguez.
Yeah.
I'd rather just sign DJ LeMahieu.
Me too. I'm saying, I'm not saying this is the option that I want. I want DJ LeMahieu on the team. Hey, there's another guy another shortstop that's going to be a free agent next year too.
Didi? Reunited and it feels so good.
Did 2020 really count? I mean, we could just let's just forget about it. We'll go back to 2022 and, you know, in a wild card game or an ALCS, whatever it looks like, ALDS, Didi hits a home run against the Twins and we into our section and all is good again.
Well, then let's play out the game. They sign a shortstop or trade for a shortstop, but they also keep LeMahieu. Do you move Gio to first base and move Gio to first base and move Glaber to third base, Glaber to second base?
No, I think that option, what you just said, is not happening. Luke Voit is the first baseman for the New York
Yankees. I want to play the game.
I know, but Luke Voit, you can't take Luke Voit out of
the
first base.
He'd be the DH.
Nah, you can't do that. Not with Stanton's contract, not with Judge's health. No. It's not possible.
Oh, God, Stan. Chapman is suspension will not happen until 2021 because there was the issue involving availability of witnesses. What the hell are they talking about?
Well, the witnesses are in bubbles. They're going to be in bubbles, right? Because they're going to be,
Zoom. They wouldn't do it in person anyway. Just do it on Zoom. What is going on here?
They might put a fake person.
Nick from George's Box, who will be on the podcast on Monday. We're going to do a crossover sort of season wrap up with George's Box and the boys of 161st Street. But Nick wrote a pretty funny article comparing this situation to The Sopranos.
Yeah.
He's like, what did Johnny Walnuts get involved here? Like, wipe out the witnesses. Chapman. No. He's going to be here for the rest of the year. Don't you worry about the Chapman suspension.
Yeah, you can't lose a guy when there's no days off. I feel like this was like
talking about witnesses disappearing. Like, come on.
No, not available.
Weird.
Not available. It's different. Yeah, it's different from disappearing.
Quote unavailable.
Bad Wi-Fi. You know, I don't know. Maybe
he's in a dead zone. He doesn't have five bars.
They're potentially, you know, overseas and nobody can get a hold of them. You know, they're on a vacation.
Overseas?
Yeah, yeah.
Okay. Who are the witnesses?
These are undisclosed names. You can't reveal the names of witnesses.
Everybody in that ballpark, is either a member of the Yankees or the Rays or an umpire. No one else was in the ballpark. Were they trying to get John and Susan?
Camera people are not swayed by allegiance in those situations. Potentially, you know, there's groundskeepers. There's lots of people, crazy people who, you know, break into the ballpark, might have seen something.
Really funny. But I guess that helps the Yankees that they didn't have to lose Chapman at some point this year and they can just sit him out for a few games in 2021. All right, eye test versus nerd test today is brought to you by Cuts Clothing. Cuts Clothing has completely changed the game. Their t-shirt has enough quality and style to wear to the office, on a date, or anywhere in between. So now you do not have to choose between a classic look and a modern feel. I'm very disappointed because I'm moving. All my Cuts t-shirts are packed up right now, or else I'd be just draped in a Cuts Clothing t-shirt right now. You know how George wants to drape himself in velvet? I want to drape myself in Cuts Clothing material. You can shop by cut. You can choose your collar, crew neck, V-neck, or Henley. You can choose the cut at the bottom. You can get the elongated. You can do a split hem, or you can go the classic curve hem. They have a great mix of long sleeve, short sleeve collars, cuts, and colors, all ready for any sort of situation. We've said it every time. It's the best t-shirt I've ever worn.
One of the things that you mentioned last time that is so very true, because I hadn't washed mine yet. You know, at least a couple, I hadn't worn them again since I washed them, I should say that. And those fibers get activated, baby. Those fibers get activated.
We need a scientist on here to talk about what the hell's going on with these fibers.
And they get softer, and there's a nice flex in there too. So if you, uh-huh. you know, if you had a couple extra beers the night before, and you're putting on the t-shirt, you know, sometimes you can feel a little bloated, feel a little like off your game. You throw on the Cuts Clothing shirt and you got that flexibility. It's very nice. Makes you feel very good about yourself. That's why Cuts is the only shirt worth wearing, loved by your favorite athletes, entrepreneurs, and even podcast hosts. It seems like every single person here is wearing Cuts Clothing these days. It's a great t-shirt. Get 15% off your first order by going to cutsclothing.com/pinstripes. That's cutclothing.com/pinstripes for 15% off the only shirt worth wearing.
Do it, guys. Do it. 15% off. That's a great deal. Well worth it. Eye test versus nerd test. Gerrit Cole's. Let's look at Gerrit Cole's first regular season. Obviously not a full thing with the Yankees. So the eye test would say, I think the Yankees got exactly what they paid for. The only issue is he gave up slightly too many home runs. Would you agree with that?
Yes, he's been great. You know,
yeah. So his stats,
speed bump in the middle. That's it.
You know, when you look at it, 73 innings, 12 game start, 2.84 ERA, and the Yankees. Oh crap! I meant to pull this. I wanted to see what the Yankees team record was in his starts, because I don't want to look at his win loss record. But like, I think it is important to look at what is the team win loss record when Gerrit Cole starts a game. So I'm gonna pull that up. But
they won a lot of them, except for the Tampa one, which is the only one that stands out in my mind as like the big loss. when you're looking at the situations and the fact that he was up against Glasnow, like that's the one that stands out in my brain. It's a little unfair to think of that one and only that one when we're looking back, because
that could have lost them the division, though. That could have been the turning point.
This team was not winning the division. Yeah, I'm sorry.
If Gerrit Cole shoves and pitches 8 shutout innings that night, maybe that's a different story.
It doesn't change Tyler Wade going out there and being a starting player for your team for multiple games. I'm sorry. It just doesn't change that. It doesn't change the fact.
It all comes back to Tyler Wade.
It doesn't change the fact that the team, you know, can't hit in certain days, and then, you know, striking out at a ridiculous clip, or, you know, that they have 3 catchers on the team. Like, this team was not winning the division. I'm sorry. When you have 3 catchers on your active roster on your team, you're not winning the division.
And one of them has pitched twice.
Right. And he's pitched and been effective.
When your announcer is talking about him being a bullpen weapon in the playoffs, things are getting crazy.
Yeah, things are getting crazy. Not a division winning team.
So Garrett Cole starts, the Yankees went 8-4 this year. They did get to sneaky start him 12 times because of all those
risk. In the beginning, it seemed like he was starting every game.
Yeah. And they lost four in a row in the middle of the season. That's sort of when the team was tanking. So that was not expected from Garrett Cole. Losing four consecutive Garrett Cole starts, like no one would have said that's going to happen. The nerd test, though, says he was really good, but not elite like he was in Houston. And it's a little unfair because maybe given another 15 starts this year, he would have been just as elite as he was in Houston. I guess we'll never know. And really, it all comes down to how does he do in his playoff starts. If he gets hit in the playoffs, people are going to look at this year as it was a failure. If he is lights out. If he nuts up and is lights out in the playoffs, then this season is a wild success for people. Some of his numbers rank him in the top 10 in Major League Baseball. Others rank him around 25 to 30. His 2.84 ERA is really good. 3.87 FIP, so slightly worse, about a run worse than his ERA. 3.24 expected ERA, 1.5 FWAR. So the nerd test says he wasn't quite as good as his traditional numbers, but he did still have 11.59 strikeouts per nine innings. Really, the home runs are the only thing that jumps out. 1.73 home runs allowed per nine innings. All of his Statcast ranks are really good. I mean, he did give up hard velocity, but that's the home run issue that we talked about a thousand times.
Can we take out or can we just focus on the Higgy starts and then look at what he was? Because then
so the Higgy stuff,
then
yeah.
then the nerds might look differently at him. Here, I mean, when you're looking at him ranking at 25 to 30th amongst pitchers, and you start look around to see what other guys are doing, and then you look at the contract, like you could look sideways at that one a little bit, because you need him ranking towards the top of the list.
10. Yeah. He needs to be top 10 in everything
pretty much
for a few years.
Pretty much. Based on that contract, yes. That said, like last year, he didn't lose a game at all. Not one. Did not lose a game for, ever since, I'm sorry, that's not true. Since May, whatever the date was, May 15th, yeah. Middle of May, towards the end of May, he did not lose a game. So the guy was practically unhittable all season long. So, I mean, he had a season for the ages and still didn't win the Cy Young.
So when we last recorded, when did we talk about the Higgy stuff?
Last time, yeah. You just wouldn't let it go. You're so wrapped. You are so fixated on this. You have an obsession.
Yeah, I do. And it's not about the fact that you're taking Gary Sanchez out of the lineup, because who cares this year? Gary Sanchez is not playing well.
But that's the point.
That's not the point, okay? The point is that I would have hoped Garrett Cole is not a personal catcher guy, because I think it's bad for a team. I think having a personal catcher is bad for the team. Cohn has been talking about it. Michael Kay has been talking about it. It bothered Posada when he was taken out for Flaherty as a personal catcher with Randy Johnson. And if it's, if it's AJ Burnett or Randy Johnson, these guys are not like the great pitchers on the team. Randy Johnson was not Cy Young Randy Johnson when he's on the Yankees and he's demanding a personal catcher. And now you've got your ace, your number one pitcher who you signed for 9 years, who you are relying on, asking for the backup catcher. I have a problem with it. Yeah, I do.
I don't want to go down this road again, but I will say this. I think it's more of a sign and more of a just a knock on your starting catcher, quote, starting catcher, than it is on the guy asking for somebody different, because he's clearly not doing the things that he needs to do to be on the same level as your franchise player, basically, based on contract, the guy that you've brought in to be, the best, the most elite guy in the league. He's not giving him what he needs. And that's a problem. That's my biggest problem.
Do you say that was the same thing with Jorge Posada? When AJ Burnett demanded Jose Molina.
AJ Burnett was an asshole. When Randy Johnson was an asshole. Yeah, I got you both of those.
Okay, maybe Garrett Cole's an asshole.
He's not. That's the thing.
How do you know?
Because he's not.
Okay. Well, I'm not saying he is, But here's the other difference, demanding a personal catcher. That's exactly what happened here. He demanded Higgy as a personal catcher. That's don't anyone be mistaken about what happened here.
Again, like,
this is what happened.
It's a different situation because Gary Sanchez has played complete dog shit. Shouldn't be the starting catcher right now anyway.
So David Cone demanded Girardi as his personal catcher.
Well, there you go. So
over Posada.
Sometimes people just like throwing to other people. The personal catcher thing is overblown. It doesn't matter. And it really doesn't matter when your catcher, who's supposed to be the starter, can't catch a great game and also is dog shit at the plate for, you know, every single game minus three.
And you're absolutely right about that. This year, it does not matter because, in fact, Higgy is giving them more offensively than Gary Sanchez is. In 44 plate appearances, which is limited, he's batting .273. Also 273 on base percentage because he hasn't walked. And he's hit four home runs. And there's that story about how Cole threw to Higgy when he's 14 years old. I don't know how we missed that. That was like I guess they grew up in the same area. I don't know, whatever. But so that's a fun story, I guess, for the personal catcher storyline. But if Gary Sanchez was Gary Sanchez and he had a 250 batting average with 18 home runs and he's got a 140 WRC plus, then it is a problem that you have to take that out of the lineup.
Let me ask you a question. Going into 2021, we know that as long as Gary Sanchez is on this team, because you and I both agree that he will be and probably given another year of leash, but I don't think it's going to go much further than that. You look at what Higgy's been doing here. Higgy's coming up, you know, been with the system for his entire career. He's come up just the same, obviously not signed at 16 years old, but has been a guy that's, you know, been playing well all the way through, knows all the guys, good relationships up and down, has been very effective. Now, offensively, we're seeing maybe a turning point. Defensively, he's a good catcher. The guys like him. Do we have ourselves a competition? Because take the names away and you look at what they're doing.
It's 44 plate appearances. Don't look at Higgy's offensive stats.
I'm just saying, you take their names away and you look at what they're doing. You look at what the starting catcher's doing. I mean, it doesn't matter what the backup catcher's doing.
Here's where there's a problem, is if Gary Sanchez for the first 2 months of next year is just as bad as he was this year, then yes, absolutely, you have a problem.
What if he comes into 2021, I'm already forgetting a year, out of shape?
Okay, but he's never done that.
I'm just saying.
Why is he going to come in out of shape? Like, he's not. Okay, yeah, sure. Then you got a problem. Like, duh. But then would you say, did he eat himself silly in the offseason because he's sad about Garrett Cole demanding a personal catcher?
That's what I'm saying.
No, I think next year, what you have to do if you're the Yankees is you have to try the Gary Sanchez, Garrett Cole thing again. You have to try it again.
I agree. You do, because the upside of Gary Sanchez is too big. It's just too big. And I'm at a point now where, you know, I'm being definitely put into the Gary Sanchez hater category, and that's fine. It's more of a frustration category. I'm more frustrated because of I know what his potential is, and he's just not living up to that potential. And it's been a long time. We've gone down this path now for a while. It seems like he's been here forever. And it's just the up and downs. I don't want that out of my catcher. I don't want up and downs. You should have a much more steady path with your catcher. The catching
situation.
I don't
mind the offensive.
Should be something that you're looking at and should be a stable part of your team, one that's in flux.
Offensive up and downs for a catcher are actually pretty normal, and I think it's because of a fatigue factor. So those normal Gary Sanchez ups and downs, which we saw in 2017 and 2018, I think are completely tolerable if he's more consistent behind the plate. You agree?
Yes.
Jorge Posada had ups and downs. He would go through stretches where he just looked dead at the plate because he was probably very tired.
I understand that. And I know that comes along with the position. That's fine. And that's why it's a good thing that you have an effective backup situation as well, because now you can supplement some innings and it's not that big of a letdown if going well. The problem becomes when the backup is outplaying the starter and people are talking about, and when I say people, I mean you, are talking about personal catching situations, but actually that guy's just a better player. And maybe there's a personal catcher situation with the rest of the staff because they should have Higgy too.
It is a personal
catcher. Ever see that?
So for this year, I know that they're going to keep the Cole Higgy for the playoffs, because obviously, look at how he's pitched. But all I want is next year, in a full season, try the Gary Sanchez matchup again. You have to give it more than seven starts.
They're
or whatever
going to.
It was.
They're absolutely going to. And maybe that's part of this. Maybe that's because there was not that full offseason and they didn't get the full time to, you know, get to know each other and work things out. I don't know. I'm making shit up at this point, trying to give him a little bit of a, you know, a extended leash based on the weirdness of 2020. But it's really hard to chalk it up to 2020.
Did you see the Boone clip when he was asked about personal catchers? It was hilarious. So he's asked about the Cole Higgy personal catcher, and he immediately goes, you know, I don't love it. And then he realized what he just said. Like, oh, shit, you know what? Garrett Cole is asking for... You know, so... But in certain situations, it's okay. Like, so he completely just like... Immediately, we got his thoughts, which he doesn't like it. And then he backtracked on it because he realized that, oh, Garrett Cole...
I mean, obviously, it's not an ideal catcher situation when a pitcher needs to throw to one guy, because it will throw... You know, it doesn't give you options. And when you don't have options, yeah, that's not a good thing as a manager or as a
baseball
team. What if
Higgy gets hurt? What if Higgy gets hurt in the playoffs and then Garrett Cole has to throw to Gary Sanchez? Is he gonna suck?
Hopefully Gary Sanchez doesn't suck. You're right.
Is Cole gonna suck?
Hopefully Gary Sanchez doesn't suck. I hope so.
You said it says more about the starting catcher. I think it absolutely says more about the starting pitcher.
Okay. Well, agree to disagree. I think the fact that the guy that we're talking about might not be the starting catcher. Just he's not playing like it, at least. So that is an overwhelming
part of the
situation.
He's gonna catch every non-Cole game.
Okay.
And I think we probably saw the lineup when he isn't in the lineup. We probably saw what it was gonna be last night. LeMahieu, Judge, Stanton, Voit, Glaber, Hicks, Gio, Sanchez, Frazier. That was the lineup. Not exactly what I would do, but.
So, I mean, the question, given the situation and given the season that he's had, is that the right move for him to be catching the rest of the guys right now, not Gary Sanchez by hope and projections and this is what we think this guy can be right now. Is that the right move? Is he the better player to play?
I think he is.
You think he's the better player? He's playing better.
Yes.
Okay. You're
he's better than Kyle.
If his name was
better than
Kyle
Higashioka, Kyle Higashioka has 44 plate appearances. That is nothing. He is not a starting catcher. He is not.
Here's the thing. You look at Gary Sanchez, the amount of plate appearances that he has and the production that he has.
Uh-huh.
Tell me which one's worse. Not having
talked about Gary Sanchez. Didn't we? Wasn't it like almost exactly 44 plate appearances that we talked about in eye test versus nerd test? Gary Sanchez's last 44 plate appearances were like 116 WRC plus. So basically exactly what Kyle Higashioka has done in 44 plate appearances.
I just have seen what's happened the other outside of those 44 plate appearances, and it's been dog shit. So
yeah, it's been terrible. And he had a putrid at bat last night in a key situation. The Yankees were just lifeless. They left the bases loaded a million times, and Gary Sanchez had a key spot in bases loaded. I think it was the second or the third inning, and he swung at a pitch in the dirt. It's extremely frustrating. I know that, but guess what? Higgy wouldn't have done shit there either.
Well, you can't say that.
Ugh. I hate personal catchers.
Gary Sanchez is the problem here. If he was playing the way he should be playing, then we wouldn't have the situation at the end of the day.
Why is Garrett Cole the first pitcher to require a personal catcher with Gary?
This is going to be tough because he's the only one that's been on the staff for, you know, a while that's you know, demanded the type of things that he's just leveled up. He's just a level up. And clearly, Gary is not staying
with him. Think about all the pitchers that have been throwing to Gary Sanchez since 2016.
You know what we need? You know what we need? We need to know why. We really need to know why. Why does Garrett Cole not like throwing to Gary Sanchez?
We're never gonna.
That's what that answers our questions. What's the actual reason? We need to bug his house.
We're never gonna find out.
Because that reason is going to say something about pitch selection. It's going to say about the way that he does certain things. It's going to be...
I can't imagine it's pitch selection because the catcher does not dictate the pitch selection.
It's going to be something along the lines of in the ilk of preparation. Guarantee it.
It wouldn't surprise me if it's just a mental thing where he's like, you know what? I'm afraid to throw something in the dirt, or Gary Sanchez isn't framing this correctly, or Gary Sanchez is doing that weird herky jerky thing, which apparently steals strikes, but I don't know how it steals strikes.
Because he takes a like ball a that's
goddamn
on the corner.
Buffoon back there.
He takes a ball that's already on the corner, on the black, a beautiful pitch, and then yanks it back into the middle of the plate.
No, so pitch selection, I understand that if you're completely in sync and in rhythm with your catcher, pitch selection can be great because you don't have to shake him off. But really, when it all comes down to it, the pitcher decides what pitch he throws. So if Gary Sanchez puts down a fastball and Gerrit Cole wants to throw a slider, guess what Gerrit Cole's going to throw?
Right, but exactly. Okay, fine. That's, you can say that, but the guy's got to shake him off. Like, why are we not on? Why am I shaking you off?
It's so easy to get on that page.
Apparently not for Gary Sanchez.
I don't think it's pitch selection is what I'm saying.
I don't know what it is, but it's got something to do with his defense. So,
yeah, I just find it so odd that Cole went out of his way to praise Gary Sanchez in the first
month. He didn't go out of his way. He was asked a direct question.
Yes, he did go out of his way. He went out of his way. Every chance he got, he was talking up Gary Sanchez.
When that's early on too, and that's something that you want to do as a new guy coming in, starting catcher, understood. But when you're asked a question, you answer it in a way that's non, you know, you don't want to like ruffle feathers. I understand that.
Do you know why I really hate personal catchers? Because I hate talking about it.
You and me both, baby.
I cannot promise you it's the last time we'll talk about it, but this is the last regular season episode that Scott and I will be doing like this.
The amount of contract, was this a 5-year contract?
What?
Are you going to reflect on this show to see if, and because it's the last regular season show of your contract?
Yes, I'm up for a renewal. I'm expecting a big deal. Maybe, no, I will not accept options because I will file a grievance. But so like I said, Monday's show will be a season wrap-up with George's Box and 161 Boys crossover. And then Scott and I are going to do a preview episode for whoever the Yankees play, either the Twins, White Sox, or whoever it is. It's up in the air at this point.
Probably going to be the White Sox.
Then we're on the grind, right? We're on the grind of mini episodes, 20, 30-minute reactions after each playoff game.
Yep, that's what we're doing. Let's see how this works with a 3-year-old toddler that doesn't sleep. This is going to be interesting. Things are going to get nuts.
So last season it was, let's go out in the park behind Yankee Stadium and Scott piss all over buildings and I try and wrangle everybody in to do a podcast. This year it's going to be at home.
Yeah, that's sad. That's a sad thing.
Very sad.
Because last year was just such a pinnacle of, you know, obviously not what happened on the field, but it was just so much fun in the playoffs going out there to every home game. I missed one home game. And you know, we had a lot of people in the stands. It was just a unique time, and it was a lot of fun. And I love recording those post game playoff reaction ones outside the stadium at the old stadium. It's just a lot of fun. And yeah, we can't do it this year because the bullshit of 2020.
We could still go out there.
I mean, I guess we could,
but we're not, stupid.
But we're not.
Not going to walk around the Bronx when there's no baseball games going on.
No.
All right. That'll do it. Talk to you. Well, listen to the Monday show. We'll talk to you again Tuesday and every day after that.
Hey, guys. Thanks for listening to the Bronx Pinstripe Show. Make sure you find us on iTunes and subscribe so you can get all new episodes directly onto your phone. If you do like the show, we'd love for you to take a minute and give us a 5-star rating and review in iTunes. It really helps us out and allows us to create more shows. We're on Twitter at Bronx Pinstripes and the same on Facebook. You can always find us there talking Yankee baseball. Thanks again, guys, for your support. Really appreciate it. And go Yankees.
For the ones who work hard to ensure their crew can always go the extra mile, and the ones who get in early so everyone can go home on time, there's Grainger, offering professional-grade supplies backed by product experts so you can quickly and easily find what you need. Plus, you can count on access to a committed team ready to go the extra mile for you. Call, click Grainger.com, or just stop by. Grainger, for the ones who get it done.